CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Environment Canada has put Lower Mainland residents on flood watch, and the shortage of housing in BC is now affecting persons with AIDS. We'll have all this, plus sports and your five-day weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. Two UBC scientists are bringing the effects of global warming home to the Lower Mainland by literally showing what climate change would do to the BC landscape. Stephen Shepherd, a professor in the disciplines of landscape architecture in the Faculty of Agricultural Sciences, as well as forest resource management in the Faculty of Forestry, is leading a team of researchers in both faculties involved in the project. The project aims to visualize future climate change scenarios in Delta and the North Shore of southwestern BC using a combination of local images and international data on carbon emissions scenarios. Information on the project is available at UBC's Collaborative for Advanced Landscape Planning. Go to www.calp.forestry.ubc.ca and then /visioning.html and click on the Delta British Columbia Visioning Project Presentation. Now with a look at other local news, here are Rita Farkas and Megan Turcato.
Environment Canada has issued an official flood watch for much of the Lower Mainland. Areas included in this flood watch are the North Shore, Coquitlam, Maple Ridge, Mission, areas in the Fraser Valley around the Nicomecal River, the Chilliwack River, Sleece Creek, and Howe Sound along the Sea to Sky Highway corridor. In general, if you live near a river, creek, or stream, stay well away from the banks because the high volume of water can make the banks very unstable. Also, Environment Canada asks that people do their best to keep the storm drains clear. The rain isn't going to let up either. The current forecast calls for another 100 millimeters of rain in Vancouver and 150 millimeters near the mountains. River levels will continue to rise overnight and peak sometime tomorrow morning. You can monitor flood watch warnings at www.env.gov.bc.ca/RFC.
On that note, Metro Vancouver officials are advising Lower Mainland residents to stock up on clean water, as stormy conditions of the past 24 hours could lead to cloudy drinking water. Heavy rains affecting Vancouver's North Shore region have increased turbidity levels in the Metro Vancouver's water reservoirs, causing more dirt and debris than usual to become mixed in with the drinking water. Though a boil water advisory has not yet been issued, officials are saying that people with compromised immune systems, such as those with HIV or those undergoing chemotherapy, should boil their water and suggest that others begin stocking up on clean water before the turbidity hits Lower Mainland homes. Last year, at roughly the same time, approximately 1 million people in the Metro Vancouver area were without safe tap water for 12 days.
And the shortage of housing in BC is now affecting persons with AIDS. The BC Persons with AIDS Society says the lack of housing means that thousands of people with AIDS in the province are not receiving the medication they need or the services that could be available to them. The chair of the group, Glyn Townsend, says there are about 4,000 people across BC who are on antiretroviral therapy, a combination drug that works to control the virus. Townsend says there are at least 2,000 people known to meet the criteria who should be receiving treatment, but that they aren't because of the unstable housing situation and what he calls communication barriers. Townsend is calling for more treatment centers to help getting high-risk people tested and stabilized. But with thousands of homeless victims, he says doing this is very difficult. Townsend wants people to know that better medications are available today and that finding out that one has HIV/AIDS is not a death sentence as it once was.
A new drug treatment facility is going to be opened in northern British Columbia. Liberal MLA from Vancouver Burrard, Lorne Maincourt, announced that this new facility will serve as a longer-term drug treatment facility where addicts can spend up to 3 years in recovery. The facility will be based on a community model taken from a successful program in Italy. Recovery facilities in the downtown east side have a 15% success rate, according to Maincourt, which he attributes to their location. The key difference for this facility is that it will be relatively isolated, away from the downtown east side. The Italian facility, which the province is modeling this new facility after, has an 85% success rate. It's now time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
All you people care about readers and making money off of her. She's a human! Leave Brittany alone!
If you don't want to miss your favorite CITR show because it makes fun of the spiel, then you've got nothing to worry about. Now you can get all of the CITR 101.9 FM radio shows off our website and download them straight onto your computer or MP3 players. Just visit www.citr.ca/podcast and dive into a pool of all of the past radio shows, such as...
Because all you people want is more, 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 more! Leave her alone!
All to your little heart's desire.
Do you want to gain a greater understanding for global affairs and the inner workings of the international diplomacy? Now's your chance for the UBC Model United Nations Forum. It is a simulated conference and the largest in Western Canada. Renowned for its high quality of debate, emphasis on principled negotiation, and diverse delegate selection, UBC MUN is rapidly becoming the world's most innovative student forum due to its topical committee simulations and unparalleled global focus. To sign up or for more information, please visit the IRSA website at irsa.ca.
What has been the result of all these ridiculously rad bands playing at Shindig?
A lot of great new tunes and a lot of beverage intake?
That's true, Bubby, but the most important result has yet to be determined. At finals, come out to the Railway Club and watch the best local bands compete for their chance to win at CRTR's biggest live music event of the year.
Is he talking about those bands playing Tuesday, December 4th at the Railway Club?
Duh.
Show starts at 9:30 p.m. at the Railway Club. Come out, hear the music, enjoy the atmosphere, and get ready to enter the lion's den of glorious music heaven!
Some of our sponsors include the Railway Club, Buckville Studios, Mint Records, Scratch Records, The High Recording Studios, Backline Musician Services, Zulu Records, CITR, Thunderbird Radio Hell, Discorder, Canadian Music Week, Vader Master Studios, and Band Merc.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:10. A radio program is aiming to shed some light on the ever-increasing youth suicide rates in northern BC. Now, with a look at other provincial and national news, we're joined in studio once again by News 101 reporters Rita Farkas and Megan Turcato.
A new program has been created to address the rising rates of youth suicide in northern British Columbia. The program, called the First Nations Action and Support Team, or FAST, will work in northern communities which have recently recorded high rates of suicide, including Hazelton, where there were 8 suicide attempts in just 1 week last month. The FAST team includes representatives from 15 local Aboriginal communities who have been trained to fight the rising number of suicides in their area. Teams of 2 to 4 people will go to a community and work with locals on suicide awareness, prevention, and crisis intervention in the aftermath of an incident. Program organizers hope the FAST team will have long-term benefits and help turn the high rate of suicide this province's north around.
In Edmonton, 2 companies have an unconventional proposal to ease Alberta's affordable housing crisis. Ajust Housing and Ocean Trailers thinks using units made from cargo containers could do well to impact the housing troubles the province is seeing. The containers made of steel range from 6 to 16 meters long and are converted into homes by installing insulation, flooring, and utility hookups. Ocean Trailer Manager Dwight Warawa says the units even have windows. He says his company currently has about 100 units on order from China. Warawa says the units are a good alternative to sleeping in a tent or on the street, and adds that they are quite affordable. He believes every city should have a few hundred of the containers to mitigate escalating real estate prices. Warawa is currently negotiating with the city of Grand Prairie to introduce the containers. Similarly, Dale Elton of Ajust Housing thinks the containers are the affordable and environmentally safe home of the future. He notes that millions of containers arrive from China, full of goods, and then sit empty here in North America because not as many goods are shipped back to Asia. Another benefit Elton sees is the containers are designed to stack on top of each other, which will be important as the cost of land increases in Alberta. Alton estimates each container home could cost as little as $35,000.
And Liberal leader Stéphane Dion has hinted at the possibility of forcing a spring election, saying that his party's decision to continually abstain from key confidence votes against the minority Conservative government will not continue into 2008. Dion says his decision not to vote against the Conservatives was for good reason. He did not want to force Canadians to vote in their third federal election in 3 years. However, in an interview with the Canadian Press last week, when referring to the Conservatives, Dion stated, "You cannot keep alive forever a government who wants to die." At a recent Liberal strategy meeting in Montreal, some strategists said an election could be forced as early as February. And though Dion did not directly endorse the idea, he did not rule it out either. He feels Canadians have become increasingly disenchanted with the Harper government and are ready for a change.
Leaders of the world's governments are descending upon Bali, Indonesia this month for the UN Climate Summit that will attempt to reach a deal that should replace the controversial Kyoto Protocol. Rebecca Henschke from FSRN reports.
World governments are meeting for a key UN climate summit that will attempt to reach a deal on what should replace the Kyoto Protocol, which ends in 2012. Talks will center on whether binding targets are needed to cut emissions. It's the first such meeting since the IPCC, a panel of leading scientists, concluded that climate change was very likely caused by human activity. FSRN's Rebecca Henschke reports from Indonesia.
The annual high-level meeting organized by the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, or UNFCCC, is under pressure to deliver a global agreement on how to cut rising greenhouse gas emissions. Rachmat Witala, the Indonesian Environment Minister, who was named as president of the conference, pledged to do his best to deliver a deal.
Nations have experimented with different policies and measures. The market has been operational for a while. There are cleaner technologies available. We have developed tools to address the problem. Now, what we need to find is the political will to do so.
UNFCCC Executive Director Jo de Borg urged the international community to use the summit to take concrete steps towards curbing climate change. At the top of the conference's agenda is the need to reach a consensus on how to curb emissions beyond 2012. This marks the end of the current phase of the Kyoto Protocol, which commits industrialized nations to cut carbon dioxide emissions by at least 5% from 1990 levels. The talks received an immediate boost as Australia's new Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, announced he had ratified the Kyoto Protocol.
I'm pleased to inform the conference that Australia will move to immediately ratify the Kyoto Protocol.
Thank you. That was a very enthusiastic appreciation for this message.
The move by Prime Minister Rudd, who will also travel to Bali, leaves the United States as the only advanced economy yet to ratify the protocol. The conference is also scheduled to consider how to fund projects that will help developing nations deal with the impact of climate change. Mr. Jo de Borg warned that Bali and other idyllic places vulnerable to climate change were destined to become lost paradises unless drastic action was taken. He stressed that much can be achieved before the environmental ministers arrive at the conference on the 10th of December.
And this includes agreeing on the framework for the adaptation fund so it can start funding real adaptation projects. Agreeing on the framework for technology cooperation for the next few years to facilitate access by developing countries to the technologies that they need. Agreeing on the initial phase of actions to reduce emissions from deforestation in developing countries and agreeing on further work to support adaptation action in least developed countries.
Recently, the UNFCCC itself announced that greenhouse gas emissions from 40 of the world's richest nations rose to a near all-time high in 2005. While ahead of the Bali meeting, the Nobel-winning Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warned that damage to the Earth's weather systems this century would doom poor countries to worse hunger, water stress, and damage from violent storms. Nearly a third of plant and animal species could be wiped out. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Rebecca Henschke in Indonesia.
And again from our friends at FSRN, former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has lost his bid to reform that country's constitution. FSRN reports.
In an unprecedented decision, on the heels of massive street demonstrations, millions of Venezuelans went to the polls over the weekend. The result? The Venezuelan opposition gained its first victory over President Hugo Chavez in 9 years, defeating his constitutional reform referendum yesterday by a margin of less than 2%. FSRN's Mike Fox has more from Caracas.
If passed, Sunday's constitutional reform would have lowered the work week to 36 hours, created a Social Security fund for the self-employed, and passed more power down to Venezuela's people through the communal councils. It would also have eliminated presidential term limits and given increased power to President Hugo Chavez, which appears to have pushed opposition voters to the polls in greater numbers. Results were read early this morning by Tibisay Lucena, president of the National Electoral Council, solidifying an important victory for the sector against the reform.
Block A, the no option, 4,504,354, with a 50.7%. The yes, 4,379,392, with a percentage of 49.29%.
President Chavez immediately recognized the opposition victory rather than attempt a recount or wait for the incoming paper ballots.
Can you imagine if this were to be drawn out all day today, all day tomorrow, and all day Tuesday? No. No, no. So before the country and before the world.
The elections came 2 days after Chavez announced to a crowd of hundreds of thousands of supporters that if the U.S. meddled in the Venezuelan elections, he would stop exporting oil to the United States. Chavez supporters awoke before 4 a.m. yesterday and began to line up outside the polling places. Voting throughout the country was calm, without any major incidents, and faster than in previous years. Independent international election observers from over 50 countries were in Venezuela for the referendum. Paul-Emile Dupré is a lawyer and member of the European Parliament from Belgium who observed yesterday's elections and verified that everything was running smoothly.
Every group we have visited so far, about 5 or 6 centers so far. And so far we haven't seen any trouble. The queues are not too big. And also we see that the process is more organized. The CNE, the electoral body, is managing better. And I think really that it will confirm that in this country now they have a very serious electoral system. So I must say that this is more transparent and more modern system than the one I know in my country, in Belgium.
But the day was not without passion from both the pro- and anti-reform camps. 2 hours before the close of the voting centers, opposition student leader Yon Goicochea called on Venezuelans to vote against the reform.
We've had more than 5 months in the streets where this movement has grown in force across the nation. The only thing I ask for the Venezuelan people is that you go execute your right to vote. Ladies and gentlemen, today can change the history of Venezuela. The more people vote, the more hope there is for Venezuela. And the more that people vote, the more hope there is for the future.
As the afternoon wore on and with the vote still too close to call, Venezuela was tense with rumors of potential opposition violence and protests in the case that the reform were to pass. Finally, the results in favor of the no vote were announced shortly after midnight Eastern Daylight Time. Chavez called this weekend's referendum his most important election yet and said the changes were necessary to make the shift towards 21st century socialism. Although the nearly 70-article reform did not pass, Chavez says he will continue to push for the implementation of his proposals through non-constitutional means.
We continue in the battle of constructing socialism under the framework in which the Constitution permits. I want you to know that I will not retire not one comma of this proposal. It continues to be a proposal of the people of Venezuela. This proposal is still alive.
According to some international analysts, the result of the election may actually be a positive for Chavez, as it proved to the opposition and his international critics that the Venezuelan president was willing to accept the rules of Venezuelan democracy. Nearly 9 million Venezuelans voted yesterday, which is just over 50% of total registered voters. Michael Fox, FSRN, Caracas.
And thanks to Mike Fox and our friends at FSRN for making those pieces available to us for rebroadcast. It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Jeff Sargent will tell us what's happening in UBC Athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
Sometimes I feel special, like an apostle of Jesus or something.
And how does it make you feel?
Like I want to hustle.
Yes, I see.
You don't need a psychologist to know that what you crave is Apostle of Hustle, the ultimate indie rock band. CITR presents Apostle of Hustle Saturday, December 8th at the Plaza Club on Granville Street. Come out for a chance to hear them play new music from their album National Anthem of Nowhere.
That'll cure anybody.
In professional opinion, would be to recommend Apostle of Hustle. Yes.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Katie Comley, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:24 and time for a look back at the past weekend in UBC athletics. Here's Jeff Sargent with Thunderbird Eye on Sports.
Wow, what a final weekend it was for the UBC Thunderbirds before their month-long break for the holidays. We begin with men's basketball, and after an outing Friday night that the Thunderbirds themselves called an embarrassment, the boys in blue bounced back Saturday and hung on for a thrilling three-point win over the Victoria Vikes. Here's CITR's Daryl Wiener with the finish.
13 seconds. They need a three to tie. Dunlop looking to call timeout, doesn't do it. Gonna have to heave up the three. There it is. It's way short. And UBC hangs on and wins. A great basketball game, 64-61 over the Vikes.
And so UBC earns the split in their weekend series with their division rivals after getting lit up 92-76 a night earlier. The clutch performer for UBC on Saturday was Chris Dick, who put his team on top late in the fourth quarter when he scored 8 points in a row. With the score tied at 53, Dick hit a three-pointer, then a layup, and capped it all off by driving to the hoop for a tough shot before adding a free throw. He finished with a game-high 19 points and 4 assists. Also strong for UBC was second-year guard Alex Murphy, who drained the eventual game-winning three-ball. He credits his team's improved performance from the free-throw line for the Saturday win.
I think we did a much better job there, and we hit our free throws this time. So I think overall we played as a team better, moved the ball, got it inside. Our post did a great job tonight in sealing and making opportunities for the guards to shoot it.
UBC was able to hold Victoria to just 21.1% from outside the arc, compared to 57% on Friday. So with the win, UBC finishes the 2007 calendar year with a one-game lead over Victoria in the Canada West Pacific Division. The Birds are back in action Tuesday, January 8th at Simon Fraser and will be in Victoria for the rubber match in their three-game season series with the Vikes on January 18th. And we'll, of course, have both of those games for you here on CITR. It's happy times heading into the break for the women's basketball team as well. After completing a two-game sweep of Victoria with a 66-59 victory Saturday at War Memorial Gym. The Vikes made things interesting for the Birds in the fourth, drawing to within five after an 11-2 run, highlighted by a pair of three-point plays from Kayla Dykstra. But thanks to a big block by Leanne Evans, the Vikes couldn't keep the momentum going long enough to draw even, and they came up short for the second night in a row. Fifth-year guard Erica McGinnis had a big Saturday night for UBC, posting 22 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 steals.
A focus of our team this week was actually game prep because we had come out soft a couple first quarters, so that was something our goal as a group, to come out and play hard the first and second quarter, and I think we did that really well this weekend.
With the win, UBC moves to 11-1 on the year, heading into the break just one game back of Simon Fraser, who the Birds will square off against in a home-and-home series January 4th and 5th to begin the 2008 schedule. We'll have both of those sure-to-be-great games right here on CITR 101.9 FM. Switching gears to hockey now, and both the men's and women's teams hosted the Lethbridge Pronghorns in two-game weekend series at the UBC Winter Sports Center. And it was a Thunderbird sweep of all four contests. First, it was a physical battle, to say the least, on the men's side, as UBC took Friday's meeting 5-3 before handing the Pronghorns a 5-2 defeat the following evening. After Lethbridge tied the Saturday game at 1 early in the first, the T-Birds scored four straight, including a pair from Jovan Matic, to secure the weekend sweep and head into the holiday break with a record of 9-7, good for fourth place in the Canada West standings. Craig Lineker, Daryl May, and Jason Lynch also tallied for UBC on Saturday, while Matic, Scott Lynch, and Brad Zanin, Matt Schneider, and Mark Deloge made up the quintet of scorers on Friday. May also collected five assists on the weekend, while Jerry Festa stopped 61 of 66 shots he faced between the pipes both nights. The Thunderbirds resume play on January 4th when they host the first of a two-game set against the Calgary Dinos at the Winter Sports Center. And yes, we will have both of those webcasts for you at citr.ca. It appears the UBC women's hockey team has turned a corner after losing six in a row to start the season and losing three of their four games prior to this past weekend. But as was the case in Lethbridge 1 month ago, the Ladybirds took both games of their weekend set against the Pronghorns to improve to 5-8-1 on the season. After a convincing 5-2 win on Friday, UBC needed a shootout to get past Lethbridge 2-1 in the rematch. The Birds and Horns were tied at 1 just under 5 minutes in, before playing through just over 60 minutes of scoreless regulation and overtime hockey. Finally in the shootout, Emily McGrathag and Christy Keller scored for the Birds, while Melinda Choi denied two of the three shooters put forth by the Pronghorns. Allison Koyanagi scored the lone goal in regulation for UBC, while on Friday, Micheline Devine scored twice to go along with tallies from Keller, Kristen McCallion, and Kaylee Robertson. As for UBC's star second-year goaltender Melinda Choi, she says in order to keep in the playoff race, they just need to do more of the same.
Just keeping our fast-paced hockey and not letting up, you know, during the break, and just feeding off, like, our wins from Alberta and tonight.
The Ladybirds return to action January 4th on the road against the Manitoba Bisons. Also entering the December break on a winning streak is the UBC men's volleyball team, which picked up its second consecutive four-set win over the Brandon Bobcats Saturday night. Steve Gotch led the way for UBC with 14 kills and 6 digs, while Andrew Bonner recorded 13 kills and 10 digs in their visit to Brandon University on Friday. Thunderbird Jared Krause on the Bobcats' effort.
They came ready to play tonight. They put the ball on us a lot more and cut down on their errors, which made us to step up our game. And I think we did so, and we got the result that we needed from a lot of guys.
The Birds wrap up 2007 with a record of 8-2, good for second in the Canada West behind 9-1 Alberta. They now have 6 weeks off before returning to action in Regina on January 11th. As for the women's team, they had a bye this past weekend, but have a big meeting with the Simon Fraser Clan on Saturday, January 4th. We'll have the webcast of that match from War Memorial Gym on CITR.ca beginning at 4:30 p.m. And, of course, the website is where you can find a complete broadcast and webcast schedule, as well as an archive of all of our recent podcasts. That's your Thunderbird Eye on Sports for this Monday. I'm Jeff Sargent.
And thanks for that, Jeff. Selena Ferris is not with us this Monday afternoon, so we wrap up with Megan Turcotto and your five-day weather forecast. Megan?
Thanks, Katie. A large low-pressure system is now moving in off the coast today and tomorrow. Expect continued showers overnight with high winds and warm temperatures staying around 10 degrees. Heavy rain will start again tomorrow as a cold front passes, allowing for temperatures to drop slightly down to 5 degrees Tuesday night. This could lead to some wet snow on the mountains. Wednesday, conditions will begin to clear with scattered showers and a high of 6 degrees. And we'll see some more of that clear, cold weather by the end of the week. And that's your five-day weather forecast.
Thanks for that, Megan. And as always, if you want to get a hold of Selena and find out more about your weather, you can contact the UBC Storm Club at, I believe, it's storm.ubc or stormclub@ubc.ca. We'll get that email for you on Friday, and you can catch up with all your weather from Selena. And that's our program for December
3rd, 2007. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts, and if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcotto produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Comley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings, coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.
Program focuses on reproductive and sexual rights in Latin America. We start with an overview of abortion, then zero in on Argentina. There, women poured into the streets during a national...
The mainstream view is you have family planning to solve social problems. No, you have to change social conditions along with family planning. It can't be the purpose for family planning. And we need to see the connections between our struggle for reproductive justice and the fight against this increasing kind